listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome today to LA Talk Radio, my show, Your Ultimate Life. And, you know, sometimes people ask me why I pick that title or what it even means. And today, the title of today's thing is not serendipity. What am I thinking about? Sight reading and improvisation. And serendipity is close because there's a lot of serendipity that takes place in the acts of sight reading and improvisation. I've got this beautiful picture of a grand piano, which is one of the pianos that I've owned over the years. It's the one that's sitting in my living room upstairs right now. It's a nice 7'6" Yamaha C7, which is a model that I love. And the one I had before that was a Steinway D, which is a 9-foot concert grand, which I had for 20 years. But anyway, I've had this one for the last 8 years, and I love this one also. Why would I use a piano? Well, I'm talking about sight reading and improvisation. Sight reading is, in case you don't know, in music, sight reading is the act of playing something by sight. In other words, you haven't played this song before, and so you're playing it by sight reading. Now, I played for years in a jazz band, and we used to do that a lot. We would get charts. Charts is the musical name for, you know, the score that all the players get. So they'd hand out a new chart, and the band director would look, you know, he'd already listened to it, and, you know, just get to going and go, and we'd sight read the piece. And it wasn't really done. Sometimes it was done to see if we're on our toes and so forth, and would pay attention and were focused and clear. But a lot of times it was just to see how the chart sounded. It was easy to listen to some of the recording, but, you know, it's like, okay, how are we going to sound doing this chart? And that process was like, okay, we're going to pick some music for the next concert. So we'd sight read some charts, and maybe we'd read them twice. And of course, the more we did it, the better we got at sight reading, not at that particular song. Obviously, the second, third, or fourth time you play a song, you're better at it. Now, today I want to talk about the process of sight reading and how that relates to creating a life you love, the life you want. Because remember, your ultimate life is yours. It is the life you have. And whether or not it's ultimate depends on you. Whether or not it sucks depends on you. Whether or not it's your tolerable life, whether it's your drag life, whether it's your awful life, or your ultimate life. Yeah, I want that ultimate stuff, you know? Well, you can have it. Like, there really is no reason you can't have your ultimate life. You can disagree with me, and we've been through this conversation I don't know how many times, but the first thing I want to do is invite you to go to the URL on the screen, www.yourultimatelife.ca, www.yourultimatelife.ca. And the reason is there's free stuff there that will help you, 5 master keys to help you create that life you dream, the life you want, with all the cash you need and all the joy you can have and all the purpose that drives you to feel good and lean into your day. Now, sometimes, in fact, not sometimes, often people think I'm either exaggerating, excuse me, or crazy when I talk about living a life that you love to get up to every day, like you're stoked. You get out of bed, and instead of hitting the snooze button 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 times, you don't hit it at all. And in fact, more often than not, you wake up 3 or 4 minutes before your alarm is going to go off, and you don't try to get a little more sleep in. You're like, yeah, I'm in it. I'm on it. Now, we've all heard those stories about scientists and others who spend, you know, artists, right, sleep in the lab or in the studio because they just need a little sleep and got to keep going on their projects. Well, what if you were dedicated and committed to something? What if something was that much fun for you? Well, that's the ultimate life. So I'm using a music metaphor, and I'm right in the middle of a huge spurt in the last several years, and it's going to go on as long as I can sing and write music, which will be till the last breath I draw. Right now in the studio, writing a lot of music. I've got 91 songs right now up in commercial release on Apple and Amazon and lots of Bandcamp and SoundCloud and Spotify and all the rest. Go look them up. See everything from EDM, electronic dance music, to meditation music, to jazz, big band jazz, to rock, pop, all of them. And they're different songs for different reasons. One of the phase I'm in right now for the last 35 or so songs has been creating songs that tell stories. So because I write a lot of books and I'm doing music that tells the stories, right? So I have 11 songs on an album called Name of the Black, and it talks about stories from the book Tightrope of Depression. And I have an album called Promise and Power, and it talks about, you know, songs like Hallelujah Road and, you know, Be a Light and other things that have it's sort of accompanying the book Down from the Gallows, but it's about recovery and growth and possibility and so forth. And the third album is called Oasis, and I'm really blessed to have someone that's doing beautiful album covers for me. The last several, I've been releasing that third album in 3-song increments, and there'll be 5 of those. And 3 of them are up, 9 songs, and I'm working on the 4th set of 3 right now. And one of those 3 is done, and one's nearly done, and I have the third one already partly written. But anyway, what am I talking about? Sight reading. Well, I didn't learn. Sight reading is a skill, right? I didn't really learn to sight read well. And so it always scared me and always bothered me. And I still, today, even though I played the piano for 63 years, I'm certainly not as good a sight reader as some that I know. And I thought a lot about that, and it used to bother me. I used to feel frustrated, and I need to get better at that and, you know, get down on myself and so forth. I don't get down on myself. I haven't spent the time to learn that skill, but I want to talk about what it is. And I do it well, but I don't do it like super well, because I've seen some, and I know some folks that I've seen do it really well. And I'm like, wow, you just got that nailed. So what does that have to do with creating your ultimate life? Well, I'll tell you what it has to do with that. Because you need to learn to sight read. Now, we're going to get off the piano bench there behind me. We're going to get off the piano bench. We're going to jump into life. Because this really is a metaphor for your ultimate life. Sight reading is the ability to sit at that piano bench and play that music that's up there, having seen it for the first time, either really well or reasonably well. Now, where I do it most is choir practice. So the director will bring some new music and wants to try it out, and I need to be able to play it at sight well enough for the choir to get through it so that the director can see how the song sounds and start deciding how they want it to go and not be fussed about the fact that I can't play it or can't play it well enough for the choir to sing the parts and so forth. So that's a place where real life sight reading comes into my world still all the time at choir practice, which we hold once a week for church. Life is sight reading. What do I mean by that? Well, the moment you're in right now is the only time you've lived that moment, like the moment you're in. Now, you know my definition, 8.64 seconds. The 8.64 seconds you're in right now is the only one you've got. It moves on smoothly from the last 8.64 seconds to this one to the next one. So it keeps on rolling, and sight reading's kind of like that. Like if the director's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're going at a particular tempo, those measures just flow like moments, right? There's no whatever. And, you know, if it all breaks down and you have to, you know, back up and start back a few bars or back at the top, okay, you do. But that's a breakdown. And so you're trying not to do that so you can accomplish what you mean to accomplish, which is, how does this song sound? Do we want to do it? And if we do, how do we want to do it? And so forth. Your chops, your woodshedding should be done at home, where you're practicing reading and practicing, you know, your fingers and nimbleness and the ability to just do things at the moment of performance. Well, life is sight reading, and here's why. You are always at the moment of performance. So today I was sitting in church and I was thinking about this 8.4 second thing. And here's what I was thinking. How am I living this 8.4 seconds, or these measures of my life, to stick with the music metaphor? How am I living that right now? How are you living that? Is this a sad song? Are you playing a dirge? Are you playing a sort of a grumpy thing? Are you playing a 12-tone, atonal, weird melody? Or are you playing something melodious and cool? Whatever genre you like, you know, pop, rock, whatever. Is it sounding good? Is it attractive? Do you feel like you want to be in this song? Well, the reason sight reading for me resonated that I wanted to talk about today is, look, you only get this moment one time. 8.64 seconds. Now, I got that. You know, I multiplied 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 24 hours in a day. Multiply all that out. There's 86,400 seconds in one day. And I thought, well, we should have 10,000 moments in a day. A big number. Why? Because moments are short, right? So there better be a lot of them in a day. And that just seemed like a good number. And if you divide that out, you get 8.64 seconds. So in this moment, as I sat there in church today, I'm thinking, who am I being? Am I being worshipful? Am I busy thinking, well, when I get home, I got to do this. Hurry up, got to get the church over. Oh, you know, I played that last song great. Or, oh, the choir happened to sing today. So I could be thinking, okay, hope everything goes right with the choir. I mean, I could be somewhere else in that 8.64 seconds instead of right here, right now. So it was an interesting exercise because what I did sitting there is I thought, I'm going to just be here now, like fully present. What can I do in this 8.64 seconds that matters to anyone, to me and to others? Now, because I play the organ, I'm sitting in the front of the church all the time. I'm up on the, you know, the stand area of the church. So I'm in front of everybody all the time, every Sunday, right? For the whole service. So I sit there and I thought, okay, so I don't have any idea that people are necessarily looking at me, but certainly they will see me periodically and they may be looking. So what am I projecting? In this moment, I am what? So I chose today, I'm being worshipful. I'm really listening to the speakers. What are they talking about? How does it apply to me? How can I live better, think better, speak better, treat people better? Because, you know, church, connection to God, principles, doctrines, dogma, righteousness, mistakes, all that stuff is important to me. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. So one of my commitments now in my PTAC is that I do as little of that as possible. And I don't create a bunch of drama when I do. One of my statements is I am forgiveness with compassion, grace, and patience toward everyone for everything, including myself. So I don't make drama around it, but I do think, who am I being right now? So today in church, I was being, okay, I'm being attentive. I'm listening. I'm not listening for a show so that someone looking at me thinks I'm listening. I'm actually listening. Is there something here that will help me be a better person? And then I had a secondary thought. And the secondary thought was, I am sitting up here in front of everybody, and I'm not the only one. The leadership of the congregation's up there too, and then there's a pulpit over there with somebody talking, and that's where the focal point is. But I'm still up here, so I am being attentive. Why? Because I don't want to be distracting. And besides, there might be something really interesting for me to learn there. And I want to radiate light. I mean, I feel light. I am light. Inviting you home to yourself. I am fire, infusing your heart with courage. Those are statements out of my document. So I thought, wow, I'm that. I am that. And just in the thinking of that and reminding that, changed my countenance. I got a smile on my face. I leaned forward in my chair involuntarily. I just did. I leaned toward the speaker and I was focused and attentive. Not as a show. It wasn't a dance. It was an involuntary action because I was listening. So we're talking sight reading. Sight reading is the act of being attentive, the act of being there all the way in the music so you can get through it well, and not only just get through it, but get through it with feeling, with the volume correct, and you know, the emotion, the articulation done well. So life is sight reading. Every moment, that you're having in your day, it's the only time you've had that moment. Now, the moment before may lead sort of up to that, or you can make an abrupt change in your thinking, in your life, in your direction, either because you decide to internally or because some externality happens. So facility at sight reading takes several things, and this is what I wanted to focus on. I want you to understand you are sight reading your life. And if you're a musician of any kind, then you understand sight reading, and that's one of the reasons it's near and dear to my heart, because it's a big deal. In the years when I ran the studio, people would come in with new songs literally every day. And I had just a few minutes to make a chord chart and get busy on it. So sight reading, it wasn't sight reading music, but it was the ability to create chord charts and play their stuff that really mattered to get the recording session, because, you know, they're paying for every minute they're in the studio. So, all right, here are the seven principles of good sight reading. Now, I'm going to go back and forth between music and life, but I want you to hear it about your life, because you're sight reading your life. Okay, number one is preparation. Now, if I didn't do my exercises and fingers, and I hadn't, you know, finger exercises and scales and other things, and if I hadn't learned a lot of music and performed in a lot of places a lot of times, I wouldn't have the musical facility to sight read well and be effective at it. Life is exactly the same. Your ability to sight read your life, which you're going to do in every moment, every 8.64 seconds, your ability to sight read your life moment to moment is going to depend on your preparation. Now, since we live life moment to moment, some of the present moments are spent in preparation. Every single morning, or nearly every morning, I spend half an hour to an hour practicing the piano. Why? Because I want to be prepared. I want to be good. I want to keep my fingers limber and flexible and scales and arpeggios and just stuff like that. I spend another half hour working on my voice because I sing and I want to be able to sing, you know, so all that is moments spent in preparation. Well, we've talked extensively about preparation, your personal truth document, your morning ritual, how you prepare yourself every day. So preparation is a big deal. And I'm still amazed how many people tell me, I don't really have, you know, I get up, have some coffee, read, listen to the news, read some email. That's not preparing for your day. That's responding to the things that have come to you. Preparing for your day is you deciding who you are as you meet and live into your day. So preparation is a big deal. The second thing, and I'm thinking of music now, is clearing your mind. So today in choir practice after church, we were doing some new music. So guess what? Sight reading. There it is. Okay, first time. We're going to try this song. Do this. Now, so step two, after having done preparation, is clearing your mind. So this is in the moment, right? Clearing your mind. That means I'm not thinking about anything else. What's for dinner? What am I going to do later? Why are we doing this song? There's too much noise over there. Wish those people would shut up, pay attention. Whatever you might be thinking. Clearing your mind is sort of bringing yourself here present, getting rid of everything else. The third step is understanding the music. Now, in this particular case, the sight reading I was doing at choir practice was religious music. I looked at it. I looked it over real quick. And I saw, you know, it was in this type kind of like a hymn. And the structure of it was, you know, there was several verses and a chorus. And it was designed to be sung by a congregation. And the choir was going to do it as a choir performance, which meant we were going to do it a bit different. But I could look at that, and because of my familiarity with music in general for decades, I could look at it and see about what kind of music it was. So understanding life and the situations you're in, the kinds of presentations, people, being able to read energy, listening, being fully focused. So much of this has to do with being, training yourself to be in the moment. Because if you're somewhere or somewhen else, you can't be as effective. Let me give you an example. We're having the NHL just had the finals. Okay. And if I was busy thinking about the game, because the game wasn't on then, the games in the past or whatever. If I was busy thinking about how well we did or didn't do or anything like that, I wouldn't have been present. I could not be effective. I can't do that. Yet there's palpable excitement all the way through the hockey season, and especially the playoffs in the last few weeks. So that's been infectious here in Edmonton. Why? Because the Oilers are in. So we're so everybody was talking about it, you know, even the hallway conversation at church and everything, talking about, oh, you know, how good the season had been and so forth. So if I had been somewhere else thinking about those conversations, I couldn't have been there. I couldn't have been there focused on the music, looking it over quickly, deciding what it is. Life is like that. So you're coming into a new conversation at work. You need to read the room. What's going on? What's the energy? Are we doing well? Is this positive? Is it negative? Am I prepared? Life is sight reading, and your ability to do that enhances your performance. Step four is to let flow happen. Now, this is something that when you're in the act of sight reading, you know, the conductor started, speaking of piano, I'm sitting at the keys and I'm playing. You just have to allow yourself to flow. Your eyes flow over the music and you just get in the movement, in the flow. And that's super important. Number five is trust your instrument. Now, I'm playing the piano, but that's not all of my instrument. My instrument is my eyes, my ears, my fingers. And you just trust that they'll go to the right places, that you can see the music and you'll know what to do with your hands. And that if you hit a wrong note, like your finger wasn't in the right place, your ears give you instant feedback, which is number six. So step six for good sight reading is, you know, hear the instant feedback and make adjustments. And step seven is to enjoy it, having fun, right? You can be focused and having fun absolutely at the same time. So those are the seven steps. Do your preparation regularly. Clear your mind when you're there ready to do sight reading. Number three is understand the music, and that can happen in seconds. Number four is just get into it, let flow happen. And all those things depend on you being there in the moment. Number five is trust your instrument. For me, in the piano case, it's eyes, ears, and fingers. Number six, is pay attention for the instant feedback so you can make the adjustments. And number seven is enjoy it. Just get into it. Now, I gave two titles to today. One was sight reading and one was improvisation. Improvisation, you know what improv is. Like if your drama improv is just getting together and doing some things, you know, acting improv. I had the wonderful fortune of being with Nathaniel Montgomery, who's a friend of mine, a fellow coach, and he lives in Sedona, Arizona. But he and I were in a mastermind together several years ago, but we were in the mastermind for several years. And one of the neat things that he does is he's an improv guy. He's done a lot of drama work and, you know, that kind of thing, and he's good at improv. So after one of the days of the three-day mastermind, we would have a nighttime improv class, and he would teach us some improv. And what that was at the time, he would just give us some direction. Get in a circle and do this and pass movement this way and that way and, you know, say this. And I'm not particularly skilled at creating improv games, but he was, because he'd taken lots and taught lots. So it was fun. But these exact same rules apply. If I'm focused on something else, some conversation that's happened before, or I'm anticipating something else, I won't be able to be there in the room in the moment. Improvising, understanding the music, understanding the situation, and, you know, enjoying it, being in the flow, just doing things, and allowing yourself to be creative. Here's one of the things I know about music improv. So that's about drama improv. And I didn't do this yet, but I keep thinking I'm going to take several improv classes just because I want to get better and faster and more fluid at accessing possibility. Because one of the things I learned from Nathaniel and the group's thing we did is just do what comes to mind. Be there. Go with the flow. And that's the literal meaning of go with the flow. Well, music in improv is exactly the same. when I first started learning to play jazz improv on the keys, I was not very skilled, just beginning. And you know what really kept me from being skilled? I was worried about making a mistake. Now, I'm not even sure what a mistake is, because by definition, improv means whatever you're doing. A perceived mistake, and this applies across all areas of your life, so I want you to hear it that way, but in music, a perceived mistake is I play a note or a riff either outside the rhythm, so rhythmically it doesn't make sense, or harmonically it doesn't make sense, what you'd call on the sheet music as a mistake. You play a note, right? It's not, you don't think, or it doesn't seem to fit in the scale or the tonality or the modes of the music. So there's a story I want to share with you, and this is about Herbie Hancock and Miles Davis. Now, Herbie Hancock's a fabulous jazz pianist, and if you know that kind of stuff, you do, and he also did a lot of funk, and Miles Davis, of course, is a legendary trumpeter of the bebop era and later post-bop and so forth. They were playing together, and Herbie Hancock was telling this story later. And so the two great musicians were playing together, and Herbie said, and then I made a mistake. I played a wrong chord. And he said, it felt like that. And you know what happened? Miles heard that, and in trusting his instrument, eyes, ears, in his case, mouth, because he was trumpet playing, there was a small pause, and then he played a riff on the trumpet that made the chord that Herbie played fit. And so they went down that avenue and explored it in the tradition of that kind of music and then came back. Herbie's lesson from that he talked about was how amazing. Miles' ability to hear that and make something out of it was legendary. And it turned what he thought was a mistake into an alternative exploration of the unfolding of the melody. Now, you could think at it, oh, he rescued him. Or you could think of it as insensitivity, paying attention to a direction. Maybe Miles didn't even think of it as a mistake. Alternate universe. I'm going down that road over here. Go over there. And did that. And it fit and it worked and the rest. So improvisation in music is, just like it is in drama, it is free-form application of melodies. And so it's not unusual for a band to have, you know, you're playing a chart and you're halfway through or partway through, and then the trumpet player will have a chorus, 8 or 16 or 32 bars, and they'll play whatever they want. And it's in the style of whatever. And if you played or listened to much jazz or funk or bebop, any of that stuff, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So if you've played it or if you've heard it, you know, then the sax player will take the chorus and the piano and the drummer will have a solo, et cetera, et cetera. All those are improvisations, which means created in the moment a piece of music that fits in the context of what you're playing. Life is an improvisation because the framework is set. Now, let's consider how that works. You get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You go to work if you have work. Hopefully, you do a morning routine to create your day or create yourself about who it is that's showing up today. And I say that a lot. I'm going to emphasize it every time I say it. Creating yourself means I have done my spiritual work, some physical work, some emotional connection, so that, and mental, you know, stimulation, so that I am awake, alive, and prepared for my day. You might think, I don't have to do that crap. You don't. You're right. But you'll be a third as productive, a third as happy, and a third as effective if you don't do it. And you'll be three times more productive, more on target, less redos, less mistakes, more consistent, more powerful if you do. So let's just say you did that. You do your morning preparation stuff, and then you come downstairs, or if you don't have that, you come out and meet other people in the household. Or if you live alone, you get in your car and you're going somewhere, or you get on your first Zoom meeting or whatever. And then the improvisation begins. And the sight reading begins. So sight reading and improvisation are powerful metaphors for how you conduct your life. And the improv is because, like, you don't know what anyone's going to say. What Nathaniel, you know, would do for us is he would assign us characters. Okay, you're a grumpy person trying to, you know, you've had a bad day and this and that. So then you need to behave that way. And so then we would assume a character and behave a certain way in a given situation. And he'd define roles. And you met at a door, you meet in a park, you know, you're watching a television program together, whatever. And so they'd set the boundaries and then you act in the situation. Well, it's a fabulous metaphor for life. Because if you don't prepare yourself with who you are, I'm honest, I tell the truth, I'm kind, whatever you decide you are, then what happens is we just react to situations. And often we react in a way that's like, oh, I got to fix that. That isn't what I meant. Oops. And if we prepare ourselves to be who we want to be, then we react consistently with our own values. I'm not even talking about society's expectations or anybody else. I'm talking about who you decide you are. Improv is the same thing on the piano, on the trumpet, in drama, comedy. It's an improv. And here's why. You don't ever know what anybody else is going to say or do or be or think. And here's the funny part. In a comedy or drama improv, you might think you know, you might have an idea about what somebody's going to say or do or be, and you're totally off. And if you're not open and fluid, you're going to stand there and not know what to do. Well, how many times have you done that in life? You're in the office, there's a conversation, and or you're with a client and they ask a question and it was like off the wall. You were not prepared and you have no idea what to do. Your improvisation comes to a halt. Your sight reading of life is like, ooh, that was unexpected. So what do? Well, you fall back on the seven steps. The seven steps are preparation. If you've decided you're kind and you're honest, you tell the truth, and your goal is to lift and bless people, and when someone does something off the wall, everything that you think, say, and do comes from a place of, I'm kind, I'm loving, I lift and bless people, and I choose, because this is who I am, to make the best out of every situation. Another way I could choose to be is, I'm going to make sure I get mine. I get my what's due me, my goodness, my recognition, my cash. And I'm going into every conversation situation that way. Well, being that person, I'm going to behave completely differently. Okay, so an improvisation in music is the same way. Depending on what the song is and what's going on before, you're going to play your chorus, your 8, 16, you know, 12, 32 bars or whatever it is, and you're going to play it in accordance with what you think you need to do. And you're only going to be as good as your preparation. Number one, you're only going to be as good, and this is in life as well as in music, you're only going to be as good as you have cleared your mind. If you're thinking about something else and all of a sudden it comes up to your chorus, your turn, and you haven't been listening to what the other things were, and you're not with the swing of the music or the beat, and it's your turn to play, it's like, oops, I don't even know. Wow, that was stupid. And you have to do all that work, even if it takes only two or three bars. You have to become present. Get here. Get now. Dredge up the memory of what came in your ears, even though you weren't listening. And then start from there, and there's obvious disconnect and an obvious defugality, a discontinuity. Remember, the seven steps are really clear. Preparation, that's woodshedding and practicing on your own time. That's your morning ritual, your morning routine. That's familiarity with your job. If you're writing, it's familiarity with the stuff you're writing about or where you want to go with the characters. Or if you're writing a book, like I've written a lot of those, it is a real clear story arc about where you're going with your story and what your characters are doing and where the development is going to take you. And if you're writing music, like I do a lot of, it's like, okay, what is the message that I've got to give to these people. So preparation is what you do every day, every single day on purpose. Why? So you're good at what you do. Like, love yourself enough to get really good at what you do, no matter what it is. When we don't get good at what we do, it just means we don't love ourselves. Anyway, that's a different topic. So preparation's number one. Clearing your mind, meaning nothing else is going on. You're busy sight reading your life and you're improvising your life all at the same time. Just like me sitting at those keys behind me. And I hope you're watching the video. Beautiful piano. All right. So understanding the music I wrote as number three. And really what that is reading the room. Like, what's going on here? Where have we been in this conversation? Is the work project going well? Is the relationship conversation flowing smoothly? Are we in the middle of our 17th argument like we do? And we always get stuck here about this thing. And they always say that. And they always feel like that. And then I always get mad. And like, you don't have to live. That's like playing the same improv over and over again. The same sour notes come out. The same discordant language, the same strident energy. That's not good. That's not fun. Who wants to live that life? That's certainly not your ultimate life. So understanding what's going on. Now, sometimes, like in the Herbie Hancock example with Miles, your bandmate or your conversation mate or your colleague at work or your client or whatever it is, they will do something completely unexpected. Your preparation, your clarity and presence of mind, your understanding of the music and the frame will allow you to not panic, to not even worry, to be completely in control in that situation. Now this, I'm going to slow down and talk for a minute on this. I'm a coach, and you know that. For the first years of my coaching practice, I was so worried about whether or not I was going to do a good job coaching this person, meaning asking good questions, perhaps giving good suggestions or valuable things. I was so worried about that, that I couldn't pay attention to what was really going on. And when things happened that were unexpected, it was confusing and scary. And I always interpreted that as, gee, I hit a wrong note. I did something that wasn't functional, that didn't do well. And then I would get flustered and uptight. Now, as the years have gone by, I have better understood the music of the conversation. I have prepared myself well every single day. I never, ever skip that, no matter what, because I don't like showing up with my pants down or with my spirit unprepared or with my heart fussed about some other thing. So I clear all that out before I start my day. I use, you know, meditation and prayer and my PTAC personal truth documents. I do all that. Now I show up without that worry. And so when things come, whether it's at work, in a coaching session, in a casual conversation, or even an accident on the road, it doesn't matter what comes in, what discordant note comes in, because I prepared myself to handle that. And so I can. And practice does indeed make perfect with handling that. The fourth thing is to let flow happen. And that applies in every way. One of the mistakes I used to always make also, and I'm sharing these mistakes because you might resonate with them, is I somehow thought I had to maintain, you know, sort of mastery or control over the conversation, partly because I was scared that it would go in some direction and I would get over my head or get lost or sound stupid or get confused or something. And partly because, especially in coaching, I thought, well, I need to be valuable here. And if I'm not, you know, on top of where the conversation's going, we're going to get off in the weeds and it'll be stupid. And then they'll be mad and it'll be my fault and it'll suck and I'll lose a client. And I won't make money. That's sort of the business application that used to happen. But that can happen in any relationship. It can happen in any conversation, even in the grocery store with a stranger or someone in a parking lot or anything. So let flow happen comes your ability to just go with the situation, say the right thing, feel good about yourself, be okay no matter what happens, comes with rehearsal, preparation, and just practice. In other words, being in the situation. One of the most important things I learned about being a coach and all the unpredictability that comes with every session is this. I know that in an hour or two, this interaction will be over. I also know that no matter what happens in the interaction, I'm okay. There is nothing that can happen in the interaction that makes me not okay. Now, that might sound bold, but let's say I get in a car wreck and die. I'm still okay. I've already died once. I know what the other side looks like. Let's say I get injured and I go to the hospital. Well, I know what that's like. Let's say someone else gets injured and they sue me and I pay a lot of money and lose a lot of stuff. I know what that's like. It doesn't affect my or your value as a divine being, your capability to add good to the world and be loving and kind. It doesn't affect that. It's just a hink or a mess up in your sight reading and your improvisation of life. So, and if things go good, you know, then there's no big deal. It's like, yay, let's play that chorus again. That was really good. So remember that. There's nothing that can happen that makes you not okay. There's nothing that makes God not love you. There's nothing that makes you not valuable as a person, no matter what happens in your sight reading today of your life or your improvisation in the various situations you find yourself. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing that can happen. Remember that. It is so valuable to go into every situation, every conversation, every sales call, every interaction with one of your kids or colleagues or spouse that makes you not valuable or not okay. Step five, remember, I'm going through these again as they apply now to improvisation and everything in your life. Trust your instrument. You can say, trust your intuition. Trust your instinct. Learn to rely on your practicing and preparation. Just do that. I mentioned, and I'm going to mention it again, what used to scare me when I started improv and jazz is I'm going to make a mistake. I won't know what to play. I'll start and it'll sound stupid and then I'll get scared and it'll be weird and I'll stop and I'll be a disaster and then I'll be embarrassed and then I'll die and slide under the piano bench and the world will end. I never actually said any of that, but that's sort of the emotional flow that you feel. Well, number one, it's not true. It is simply not true. It never will be true. You're not going to die. The end of the world isn't going to come and it isn't going to happen. And so trusting your instrument really means trusting your intuition, trusting your preparation, trusting your heart, trusting your intention. Like you are intending to do good. You are intending to be successful. You're intending to live into your own commitments of the day. So then trust it. Trust it. Trust your instrument. For the piano, for me, it's my eyes, ears, fingers. And the ears are so important to keep me on track because if something happens that was unexpected, my ability to flow right back into it, get on track, depends a lot on my ears. Your ability to keep your life on track and creating this life of ultimate life, purpose, prosperity, and joy depends on your ability and willingness to listen and to trust your intuition. Trust your intuition and flow. Number six is feedback. Now, if you're playing a jazz chorus and it's your turn to improvise, you get immediate feedback. Like if you play something and you get off rhythm or you get off time or whatever, you know it right away and you can make some corrections. Now, here's where the key piece of preparation comes in. If something's happening in your day, you're going into a conversation that go at work and it goes south and somebody's pissed off at you and somebody's ragging on you about this or somebody flips you off on the highway or whatever, you're getting some instant feedback. Your ability to hear it and see it without drama is the master key. Because if someone reacts badly to you, says something angry or, you know, reacts in some poor way toward you, some negative way, recriminating way, if you just let that slide and keep doing, I mean, slide off your back, make whatever adjustments you need to, but do it without drama, you remain in control of the improvisation. You remain in control of sight reading. Your ability to keep sight reading your life is unquestioned and never stops. Think about that. And your ability to accept all the feedback without drama gives you masterful control. It gives you complete masterful control of your life. So learning to hear whatever the feedback is and accept it and then move forward without drama, that's your master key. And I call drama that whole thing that we do sometimes when we react. People are angry or things happen that are negative or frustrating. I call that whole pile of things drama. And it usually happens when we think we've made a mistake or we think someone's thinking poorly of us. And that's true in life, in a relationship, in a conversation, or playing your jazz chorus on the piano. When we think we've made a mistake and then we go, oh no, and that energy trashes your minute, your hour, your day, certainly the moment and everything else. Unless and until you learn to do what Miles did. Just take the twist as this is where we are now. What can I create from here? And let's go down that road for a minute and make it fit into your life. And the last thing I want to talk about is this enjoying part. You only live once. YOLO. You know that. I know that. We've all heard that, and it's the absolute bulletproof truth. You only live once. Each moment, 8.64 seconds, comes and goes. If you have mastered the art of preparation, and you have mastered that art of dropping the drama, and just living into what is occurring in your life, the sight reading of your life, and the improvisation of the melody of your being, oh, life is fun. And this whole show is about learning to live your ultimate life, a life of purpose, a life of prosperity, and a life of joy. You really can have that. And I'm a living testament. Oh. And so now I love my life every day because I've learned these very things. And this example that I've given you of music today applies, and drama and the other, I don't mean drama, I mean acting, like improv classes and stuff. Learning to do that is a key to having fun every single day. Do you realize life can be fun every day? What would it be like if you had fun every single day of your life? Why can't you? So I'm going to give you three invitations. Invitation number one is a repeat of what I said earlier, www.yourultimatelife.ca. Go there. Get the free stuff. Change your life. Get rid of the negative thinking and I call it drama, not in the sense of plays and movies, but the negative feelings that come from outside. You don't have to live with those. They're baggage you don't need to carry. So go get that help. I've given you there everything that I have created and learned for myself over the last 17 years as I've pursued this path of creating your ultimate life. The second invitation is I want to meet you. I would love to have a conversation with you. So I invite you to connect with me on any platform and let's chat. And do you know why? I have made a commitment. My commitment this year is to help 250 million people to do what? To discover your own power, to discover your own capability, to discover your beauty, your divinity, the wonder, an amazing person that you are, and then create from that place. And that beauty and amazingness is true, absolutely and without question, no matter what you've been through, no matter where you've been. You're a divine being. You're worth an infinite amount, and you can create joy and wealth all you want. So I invite you to connect. The third thing I would invite you to do is I love sharing stories of others. So if you have a situation in your life, you've been through the mill, you've had some struggles, and yet you've come out the other side and you've come out as a better person. I get to meet so many people who have said, oh, this and this and this happened to me, and now I know I can get through it. I have a message. I want to help. Well, if that's you, I want to talk to you. I want to put you here on the show. I want to share your story, your resilience and your growth, your brilliance and your capability. I want to share how you add good to the world. I want to be your megaphone and edify you and amplify you because you've been through the difficulties and have made the choices to come out the other side. Rest assured, you're valuable, you're powerful, you're important. I see your beauty. I love you. I am grateful for everything that you do, and I assure you, for real, no matter what, if you choose to do the work, do the 7 steps we've talked about, your life can be one of beautifully sight-read music with fabulous improvisations as needed. So
you're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.